Let's call the meeting of the Senate Community and Regional Affairs to order. Let the record reflect that it is 3:36, 7 p.m. Thursday, January 28th, 2016. Present today are Senator Egan, Senator McKinnon, Senator Stedman, and myself, Senator Bishop, and Senator Hoffman is on other state business and will be along later, we hope, to join us. And I'd like to recognize staff today, Christopher Dickrell from Senate Records. Good afternoon, sir. Cody Grusendorf, Cody, teleconference moderator, John Manley, Brittany Hutchison. Before we start, you know, you guys know the cell phone drill. And today's meeting, we're going to hear an overview of SB 100 Lower Slope Gas Project Proposal Tax Assessment by Governor Walker. And a lot has been reviewed and drafted regarding this assessment over the interim, so we wanted to provide the committee and the public with an update on the outcomes over the last 6, 7, 8 months. And we're not going to be taking any action on this bill today. It will simply be an update and overview by Commissioner Hoffbeck, and public testimony will be a little later. We have a few people in the queue, and it'll be limited to 3 minutes. So, Commissioner Hoffbeck, if you'd like to come up, sir, and put your name on the record, briefly review what 100 does, SB 100, and update actions in the last as many months. Senator McKinnon.
Mr. Chairman, just for clarity, we will be taking public hearing on the bill today. It just will be later in on the agenda today. Is that accurate?
That is correct.
Thank you.
Chairman Bishop, members of the committee, for the record, Randy Hoffbeck, Commissioner of Revenue. Last year, we submitted SB 100 as a structure for negotiating a PILT under the provisions of SB 138 sections. And I got one hearing and then kind of was put on pause. The bill itself was pretty much structured for how to negotiate a bill. As we moved into the summer and continued to work forward on the bill negotiations, we quickly recognized that the structure of negotiating a bill was not going to get us to a final resolution, that we just actually had to sit and just drill down on the numbers and come up with a reasonable PILT that everybody could agree was reasonable. There was just too much uncertainty within the structure of what happened here, what happens there. We just weren't making progress. So we shifted gears in the middle of the summer, actually started just really crunching on the numbers, and what I'd like to do is kind of walk through the process that we went through and the recommendations that we have at this point in time moving forward.
Commissioner, if I could just briefly interrupt for a second, I'd just like the record reflect Senator Hoffman is in attendance. Thank you, Senator.
Currently, we've reached tentative alignment with the producer parties on the amount of construction-related payment in lieu of tax, which has been abbreviated CPILT. It's had several names through the process, but it's kind of the final names now that are on it. And we've also come to a tentative alignment on the structure and target amount for operations-related payment in lieu of tax, or the OPILT. So we have two separate structures. One is how will we deal with impacts during construction, and second, how will we deal with PILT payments during the operation of the pipeline. Oops. So, going to slide 4, the CPILT, the total amount of impact payments during construction-related PILT, is $800 million. That is four-fourths, meaning that it includes BP, ConocoPhillips, Exxon, and AGDC. Since the project will be paying the PILT, the totality of the PILT will be paid by the project. There is certain discussion still on the ultimate resolution of the AGDC's portion of that PILT, whether they would essentially the state would pay itself a PILT or whether there will be some kind of adjustment where it would be three quarters with some other, ultimately it would be paid back to the state and there would only be three quarters available to the municipalities, but that's still an open discussion.
Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I certainly can wait for finance for the question, but the project and the state's ownership of the project, will that be tax exempt as far as a federal perspective?
For federal taxation? I'll have to get back to you on that.
Thank you. So yep. It goes right to what you were saying. The state brings benefit, as I understand it, to the project of being a tax-exempt entity. If we own 25% of the project, there should be some kind of relationship between the tax-exempt and what the overall construction agreement is made out for. Thank you.
The expected payout on the $800 million is over the five-year construction period. The exact schedule for the payout is not finalized, but it's assumed to be fairly regular equal payments through the 5 years.
Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering if they could, the Commissioner Fiat, if he could, kind of, is this the first committee hearing on this bill? Bill, give us a breakdown of why it's 800 and not 900 or not 700, and what input did DOT have? Do they have a whole list of infrastructure improvements that are targeted, or and so on and so forth?
To the Chair, Senator Stedman, the $800 million is a negotiated number. It's about four times what was negotiated under the stranded gas as far as impact payments. We are so early in the process, we don't have a project design, we don't have a construction schedule. To actually calculate a build would be difficult during construction. So the $800 million, unlike the old build, which has a very structured way that we got there, the construction build is a negotiated number. The it does not include infrastructure that will be paid elsewhere in the project. This would be just impacts to communities such as police, needing to hire teachers, firefighters, things, those kind of impacts, not the major infrastructure impacts. Those would be paid elsewhere from the project.
Senator Stedman, follow up, sir.
Just, I mean, could you, maybe it's going to be later in the presentation and stuff, but how do these numbers come about, and how is it going to be split out? It'll be some of the basic questions as we roll through this, and as we get on into the other details of it, it'd be nice to have a little bit of discussion on the allocation of it and the mechanics behind it and the reasoning behind it, because some projects don't even have to have builds. So even jumping into the whole negotiations of, or the whole decision of, we have a build and there's no other option, I'd like in the turn to the presentation to have some of the background stuff, because there is other options.
Through the Chair, Senator Stedman, we can talk a little bit about the allocation side of it. It is under discussion with the Municipal Advisory Group. And we really have two sides of this issue. We have the cost of the build, which is critical for the project to know what its liabilities or what its costs are going to be. And then there's the allocation portion, which is really more between the state and the municipalities or the impacted communities, which really isn't a project concern. It's a concern, it's an issue between the state and municipalities. It needs to be included within any legislation we bring forward. But we've landed the dollars first, and now we're working on the allocation piece with the municipalities and a way to allocate the money. For this particular component, we're actually looking at a program that would function sort of like a grant program where the municipalities would apply to this impact fund, indicating what they anticipate their impact to be or an impact that they've already experienced, and ask for reimbursement. But since we're so early in the process of the project, we couldn't drill down much more than that.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. I just want you, I'm going to pretty much keep my questions to pretty much minimum today, and the committee members will probably be driving most of the discussion, but as this bill moves, as we get further along down the process, we're going to have some more in-depth discussions, and I just don't want to dive off into some of the questions I have today, because I don't want to drive the conversation here, but we're going to have plenty of time to talk about it. So, and that's not to discourage any of my colleagues from asking any questions, but I'm making my notes as we go along.
Moving on to the next slide, the OPILP. The targeted amount on this is $15.7 billion to be paid out over the 25-year period of the operation of the contract. The actual payment amounts, and the reason it says target is that the actual payment amounts will vary based on the actual flow rate using a 5-year average of the flow against project design. So the 15.7 is if the project were full, stayed full, didn't have any expansions over the life of the contract, it would be a $15.7 billion payout. If there's expansions or other occurrences that increase the amount of flow, debottlenecking, the payments would actually exceed $15.7 billion. If there are interruptions of gas supply, if they don't have enough gas to keep the pipeline full for the entire project, then the total payments would be less than 15.7. But 15.7 was the target. 15.7 billion is the target amount, and we'll go through a couple of slides on how we got to that target amount. Again, it's 4/4, and the payment, and we'll, as we walk through the slides, we can explain this in more depth. But the payments are actually scheduled so that they increase at 1% a year through the life of the contract in achieving that target amount. Again, there's discussions going right now on the allocation between the state and the local jurisdictions as far as those payouts. So how did we get to the $15.7 billion? It started last year, and you saw this slide in the presentation when we brought the bill forward. It was kind of the first iteration of taking current property tax statutes and simplifying it into a formula that would derive an estimated payment that would be essentially equivalent to what status quo would have generated under the property tax structure. There were some simplifying assumptions and obviously some projections that needed to be made in order to run this out over a 25-year period of time. But the idea was to replicate the current statutory language essentially as interpreted by the Supreme Court in the TAPS litigation and calculate what the property tax payments would be. So the initial formula that the board recommended was the capital cost times an inflation factor times a depreciation factor times essentially a functional obsolescence calculation for throughput with a scaling factor attached times the mill rate. And that's essentially the simplified version of how TAPS is being valued right now. They also the MAG also made recommendations for inputs that said that the capital cost should be the FID estimate times 1.1 to cover overrides, that the inflation factor should be 4%, depreciation should be based on a 50-year floating life, and actual throughput would be on a 5-year floating average, and that the actual scaling factor would be 1. So essentially it would be that wouldn't be scaled, but they left the scaling factor in there so that if there was a point in time in the future where somebody felt like the scaling factor would be appropriate, that functionality was there. So that was kind of the first iteration of the formula.
Senator Stedman?
Just kind of briefly, but you look at the valuation of the income stream of this project, and we'll get into more detail, so I'll refine this, I guess, question and point as we go on, Mr. Chairman, as I become enlightened in the process and in the numerics behind it. But on the surface, it appears that the property tax is going to be a big portion of the value that the state is going to receive out of this project. And the weighting of that is going to be significantly different than our oil line. And our oil, as an example, when we set up our taps, we have 20 mills, and we have a significant amount of value within that value chain. And the weighting of the property tax wasn't that significant. Yet today, 30 years into the aging of the basin, roughly, we have a 20 mill rate. We have $450 million in property tax. But if we look at our severance, corporate income tax, and then our royalties, that property tax becomes a significant portion, and then it gets funneled into a directed or few beneficiaries in the state, where all of us equally own the subsurface around the state. So I'm kind of curious as we go through this why we would even use 20 mills, because I think if we did that, looked at that oil basin today, we would not set it at 20 mills, because it looks to me like it's way too high. So we take this, embedded numerics from 40 years ago, implant them in today in a whole different value stream. That's significantly, generally speaking, gas lines, my understanding, significantly weighted heavier with property tax than the oil side of the coin. That we don't disproportionately drive too much value into too few hands or communities in the state when the asset is owned by everybody. So when we go through this, and again, this is the first hearing, and the mathematics I see here, I just want to make sure that we don't get so clever that some members of our state wake up and all of the funds are sitting in somebody else's pocket, and we outsmart ourselves. We've done that before, with all good intentions. So I'm just a little, because my district and the people I represent can't get any further removed unless I move to the extent of the senator next to me out the end of the dilution chain from the gas line. So I'm very, interested in the impact of the dollar flow.
To the chair, Senator Stedman, just to address a couple of the points that you made. One, the reason that the 20 mills is still embedded in here is that we just simply felt like the starting point for the PILT should be what would have been paid in property tax if the PILT didn't exist. We've made it very clear throughout all of the hearings with the municipalities that they should not have an expectation that the allocation of the monies would flow the same as they did under the current tax statutes, that that within this PILT structure would also be an allocation method where the state would reserve a substantially more, greater portion to themselves. And in fact, the last iteration of that discussion, which was rather robust, there's kind of started looking at parsing out the allocation, which took into account the location of the assets, but also some kind of statewide allocation of the revenues, as well as some kind of indication on direct impacts. And so that's kind of the position that the MAG board is taking right now. And the discussion on the allocation will be probably one of the more difficult ones that we will have. And obviously, that will just bring the MAG board's recommendation to you. This is, since they're not involved in the negotiations of the project or the contracts, this is their way to have input into the process. But the decision making is yours, and so we expect that allocation will not all land in a couple of jurisdictions when it's all said and done.
Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know you're wanting to hear more of the presentation, but as a follow-up, does the state own a portion of the property that the proposed route will take, and then will the state receive a PILT payment back to the state?
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, the good portion of this property runs through the unincorporated portions of the state, where the state would have the taxing authority and would be the taxes would flow to the state of Alaska.
So I'll be interested to see the chart on how the money moves. It sounds like it's a lot of plumbing again, where we're fronting at least looks like $200 million, and then we may be receiving money on the other side once the field gets going. So I'd like to see how that relates.
To the chair, Senator McKinnon, that isn't part of today's presentation, but we have worked those numbers.
Great.
Continue, please.
So the next iteration of the formula really took the what came out of the TAPS litigation and simplified it a little bit. And this is what's kind of the basis of the of SB 100, kind of the language within SB 100, where the formula was original cost times an inflation factor times a depreciation factor times a throughput factor times 20 mils. And we didn't define what the inputs would be, you know, with the idea that those would be negotiated, but we wanted to create a structure for the negotiation. So the laid out where the original cost would be fixed by a pre-FEED project-specific data. Inflation factor would be fixed by the fiscal agreements, depreciation by fiscal agreements, actual throughput by just actual operational measurable amount of throughput. Design factor would be fixed by project-specific data. And then the mill rate was fixed by statute. And so that was kind of the underlying formula that we had, and we moved in the bill and was what we moved into the summer working our way through. Ultimately, we reached tentative alignment on a formula not that much different, but with the inputs in rather than just some direction on where the inputs would come from. So the OPILP methodology was original cost times an escalation factor times a depreciation factor times a throughput adjustment and times a blended mill rate. And I can go through each of those individually. The original cost was assumed to be $55 billion. The estimates that that we've seen floated is 45 to 65. The most current estimate we had when we were doing this was around the $55 billion number, and project participants have made it very clear that their desire is to push that number down even further to make the project as economic as possible. So $55 billion was the number that we used. There is no adjustment within the agreement to adjust that for any kind of future costs on that. There's no true up against the actual cost.
Oh, on that point, Senator McKinnon, and if you don't get it, I'll go.
Commissioner, do you have the gas treatment plant then, as well as the off point, or is that just pipeline you have included in there?
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, that is the feeder pipeline, the gas treatment plant, the pipeline, and the LNG plant. It's the $55 billion.
And that's currently how it's being valued in locations 800 miles away. It's including property values in other communities. Instead of the pipe, just the pipe and the transmission of volume, you're including all capital costs for the entire project.
So the Chair, Senator McKinnon, that is correct.
Thank you.
Okay. So my question is just piqued my interest. I wouldn't say much, but that piqued my interest. So this $55 billion is hard and fast, even if it overruns $5
billion? Through the Chairman Bishop, that is correct.
Okay, that's what I thought I heard you say. Okay.
And it's also hard and fast if they bring it in at $50
billion. Mm-hmm.
The escalation factor is 2.5%, and it's a composite factor of 3.25% inflation rate minus a 75% of 0.75% adjustment for obsolescence, for technology adjustments that would occur during the 25-year life of the contract. The depreciation factor is based on a 30-year life, and it's a modified floating and fixed life. And let me explain what that is. We had two very different positions on the pipeline. We looked at the idea that there's generally reserve growth over the life of any of these assets, and that we expected that by the end of the 25th year that there was actually more reserves than were estimated at the beginning of the life of a pipeline, and that the pipeline would not be empty at 30 years. It would continue on. And so what we proposed was that for every year the pipeline aged, it would grow a year as well. So in your 30th year, you would be 30 years old and a 60-year life on the pipeline. Year one, you're 0 years old and a 30-year life. So every year would just increase your life. So somebody said it was the new definition of immortality. The other side of the argument from the producers was that they felt like the life should be fixed, and that they would agree to a 30-year life, but that it should be just that the value should decline over the 30 years to the end of that life. We compromised essentially on blending the two, where although it doesn't work out exactly mathematically, that the life would grow by a half a year every year of the life of the asset. And that doesn't work out perfect mathematically that way. We calculate both ways and then just divided the two. So essentially what you'll have is that this contract's 25 years long. So over 25 years, your life would grow 12 and a half years. Plus you'd still have 5 years left because it was a 30-year life. So after 25 years, this pipeline would still have 17 and a half year life left under this formula.
Senator Stedman,
would you explain to us what happens after that? Because there's roughly no one reserves, in my understanding, to service that lifetime of 30 years and 25-30 years, and we expect a lot more gas once the companies have the ability to, to monetize it. So how do we reconstitute this or adjust this at the end of the contract life, unlike our current situation that was embedded 30 years ago that has a extremely heavily weighted portion of the revenue stream today, so we don't find ourselves in a similar situation?
To the chair, Senator Stedman, the assumption is that the pipeline valuation would revert to standard property tax at the end of the life of the contract. The expectation, I think, is that before the end of the life of the contract, that the parties would probably seek to negotiate an extension of the PILP. And if one of the municipal advisory groups report to the governor comes out next week, you will see language that they anticipate that is probably will, or they leave that optionality open, that the PILT could be renegotiated as it neared the end of the life of the original contract. But the default would be that if the contract ended, that it would just roll back to standard property tax statute language.
Follow-up? Just for people at home wondering why these questions are coming on the table, Sitka used to have a dominant employer in town, Las Lumber Pulp Mill, at a 3.5 mill rate, which worked fine for the community, helped the business stay in, a going concern longer than it probably otherwise would have, and we functioned fine at that mill rate. And there's a big difference between 3.5 and 20. And mill rate is one of, or I guess the property tax is a better way of putting it. Property tax is a heavy burden to deal with trying to get a marginal project or forward because of the cash flow. And understand, that the industry is agreed to make these payments, and that's fine. But I'm a little bit, hesitant of why we're structuring just the way we're structuring it. And I'd also like to ask Mr. Chairman if the Department of Revenue could come back and show us the estimated split on the value stream coming into the state, with our royalties and the property tax and what's estimated is, so we can get an idea if this is, like at the committee yesterday, it looked like it was 30% of the value stream, possibly. And then with the percent of the $450 million property taxes on our oil basin today. I think it would be interesting for us to look at just to get kind of a benchmark feel of the magnitude of what we're dealing with.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, the relative size is obviously driven by the price point on the gas. But yeah, there's a price point on gas where this project is still viable, where the property tax could be as much as a third of the total take. That being said, that's also a benefit to the state because gas prices, if you get fluctuation in gas prices, that will give you a variable revenue from your ownership in the gas pipeline. You're going to be at the whims of the market just like everybody else. This would be the one essentially fixed revenue stream that the state could count on. And so there is some benefits to the state. And this is one of the benefits that the state has that the other parties in the contract don't have, is the property tax stream.
Very good. Well, that's my precise point. I'm very concerned about where the one-third value stream ends up and how it's split. And if we could ask Mr. Chairman to have a brief synopsis of how British Columbia did it. I think we'll finally set up an impact fund, and the funds went to the Treasury to be dispersed accordingly. And when I make those comments, Mr. Chairman, it's not that Southeast Alaska has a lock on the political control in the capital. That's exactly the opposite. Our political representation is getting smaller for a couple of decades and will continue, especially after this project gets smaller. And so we're not going to have the control in the legislative process that they had 30 years ago. But I have a much higher confidence level with my constituents being fairly treated over the decades, knowing that fellow citizens of Alaska, elected citizens, are going to sit at a table much like this in a different building next door and make sure that allocation of resources are fair for impacted communities that aren't impacted around the state.
To the chair, Senator Stedman, that has been a good share of the discussion that we've had as well, and recognize that under any allocation method that's been proposed or would likely occur, the state would get the largest share of the property tax or the PILT. So,
thank you.
Other components. The actual throughput would be just based on, operational measurable throughput on a five-year rolling average does two things. One, we'll talk about in a couple of slides. It gives a certain advantage to the project early on, but secondarily, it also buffers any unexpected interruptions in revenues that quite frankly, the smaller jurisdictions might have difficulty absorbing. Design throughput is to be determined. We're actually working with the producers. They've actually given us a proposal that we're reviewing on the design throughput and how to allocate the PILT to the various portions of the pipeline. Not for distributing the payments, but where do we measure the gas and how much of the total value is associated with that piece, so that we make sure that we still meet this $15.7 billion target when we add up all the pieces.
I'll comment on that. So TAPS, we measure throughput at pump one. And this project was, did I read somewhere, it's been a while, but there could be three measurements taken along the project?
Chairman Bishop, that's correct. And one of the reasons for that is to deal with expansion or introduction of gas into the pipeline at some point downstream.
Foothills gas, Middle Earth gas.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then the final is the mill rate. The mill rate is a blended mill rate at 13.75 mills. So that would be 20 mills for the GTP, 20 mills for the pipeline, 7.5 mills for the LNG plant. The reason that the LNG plant is at a lower mills rate is that LNG facilities under current statutes are locally assessed, not assessed under 4356. And so they don't have that fixed 20 mill levy. So working with the Kenai Peninsula Borough, we've made some estimates on where their mill rate might fall when you introduce an asset into their jurisdiction that could triple or quadruple their total assessed value. And so the 7.5 mills was ultimately a selection that was made by the state in this analysis, but was done at least in consultation with where the Kenai Peninsula Borough thought their mill rate might end up when this project was in place.
Senator Stedman, just a clarification on that and make sure I'm hearing it correctly, or interpreting what you say correctly. So their mill rate's 7.5 mills, and explain to me again how the Kenai Peninsula Boroughs interacts with that and what taxing authority they may give up or may gain. There's going to be a lot of residual or synergistic build-out in that peninsula. It's going to boom. So they'll have a lot of other taxing opportunities, I'm sure, for their mill rate. But explain to me how that $25 billion plant, roughly, as I recall, somewhere in that neighborhood, what financial impacts that can have for our property tax.
This is the Chair, Senator Stedman. That was essentially the crux of our conversation. Currently, their mill rate is at just slightly over 10 mills. We looked at again introducing a very large asset into their property tax base property tax. Why am I blanking on the word? Anyway, their total value would be substantially higher than it is now, three to four times higher than it currently is. You're also correct. There would be build-up associated with this, and jobs and other things. By the same token, there would also be pressure on schools and roads and things like that. And so I asked them for a range estimate of what they thought their mill rate might finally settle in at. Again, it was anyone's best guess. And then I picked a number within that range.
I'm still not. I think I might have what you just said. So let me take a stab at it, okay? we're focused on the 7.5 mill rate
right now
in this conversation. So what you're saying, I think, is with the I'm going to use a word here that's a little bit out of my league, but plethora of assets that's going to be landed on the Kenai Peninsula, I don't know if I heard this right, but I don't know if they've tentatively agreed to maybe handicap themselves downward to a 7.5 because they have all these assets to draw on?
Through the Chair, only to the extent of trying to calculate what the standard status quo property tax would have yielded. And so we just had to kind of make an estimate of what do we think the mill rate would have settled in at under standard property tax. They aren't handicapping themselves to that going forward. Ultimately, this will be replaced by a PILT anyway, so they won't be charging a tax against this particular asset. It will be a PILT. But we had to land on a number. We originally wanted to use 20 mills across the board. The producers were rather adamant that LNG facilities are not a 20 mill asset, and that would be a tax in excess of what status quo would yield. And so we had to make some estimates on what the tax base would yield.
Senator McKinnon?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It begs the question, the definition of property taxes and how property taxes are use valuation to extract a payment for basically services inside of the community, and it begs the conversation of what is the asset causing in the need for new services. In Anchorage, I went through an entire discussion during the Anchorage 2020 plan where we said We really just need to have hotels that didn't cause an additional need for new schools or warehouses to come in and be built. Any other scenario, we would be doing negative taxation, because if you brought in families under the same scenario on value, the families would kick off a variety of needs in the community that were very different than the warehouse and the hotel. And so I just wonder the whole fairness issue of this particular concept in saying that, in using valuation as a base. I understand that's what we've been doing for 30 years. It's just that a family of four has a different need inside of your community and generates different expenses in our community than a single family or one person or anything else. And so this is the way that we do it, but that's defined by state statute, right?
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, that is correct. And under just standard property tax theory, it really, land ownership of assets was an indication of ability to pay, if you go back to kind of the foundation of it. And so it really isn't necessarily tied to the impact that a particular development might have on the community or the needs to support, but really is more is an indication of the ability of that particular entity to pay the tax.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In California, they're having interesting discussions, or at least they have over the last 10 years, of applying impact fees to new housing developments, because as those developments go forward, they actually cause the borough, the city, the geographic region — we don't have those same taxing authorities as California does — but they're doing impact fees in a way that says cost causer, cost payer. If we're going to have to build a new school because a contractor comes in and builds 30 units and there's 2.5 kids per unit, we have to do an elementary school, half of a middle school, and a quarter of a high school, then we're going to add on to your building a particular cost. So Alaska hasn't faced a lot of those conversations yet, but it's interesting what you've proposed. Thank you.
Continue, please.
So there's kind of a quantum shift now in our thought process. This particular formula got us to the 15.7. And when we ran the numbers out for 25 years, we get to 15.7 billion. We now want to convert that to a PILT. And there was two ideas that we wanted to embed in the PILT. The first one is that governments do a lot better with escalating revenues than they do with declining revenues. And if you just look at a standard property tax, particularly one based on cost, you see that if it's a wasting asset, the value goes down over time. And governments have trouble dealing with that. And an asset of this much significance, that would have been very difficult to deal with. So there was the idea that we could build the PILT structure so the value actually increases over time by starting at a lower starting point and still achieve the same $15.7 billion in payments over the life. That also provides one early benefit in the project, in that it reduces to some extent those early payments when the project is most economically challenged. We've got another couple of ways that we deal with that as well.
Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you tell me what the price for the MCF is in this model?
To the chair, Senator McKinnon, this is not sensitive to the gas price, only through the cost of construction and the throughput.
So we know that the state is facing a $4 billion deficit right now, and that there is not a lot of profit right now in oil.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing there's, because we've been told, there's less profit in gas. Just wondering what price we would have to generate this $15 billion before we get going. We should know that number. What number by MCF generates $500 million every year going forward to pay property taxes, which could be a third, from your statement, a third of the state's profit?
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, within the gas scheme, those analyses have been run, but they're largely based on the information from the various producers on what they see their costs and return investment requirements are, and so those numbers aren't publicly available as far as the underlying assumptions. We could calculate what gas would yield, price would yield that particular input. I don't have that off the top of my head.
If I could ask what price that we would have to just collect the the proposed tilt, that would be good to know.
Senator Stebbins,
just a concept check with the commissioner just on, on track here. If gas is a different animal than oil, and we've all worked on that oil for quite a while, but so the pilt, that roughly one-third is relatively a fixed cost. I mean, there's some escalators in it, but the property tax is relatively fixed. The 12 payment to the state, the royalty share, that 13, 12 and a half, whatever that other percent is to get it up to 25, that's going to be very sensitive to the end price of the gas and our 25% share. So that could be, you know, increased in strong market, you know, environments and maybe decreased in other market environments. Is that correct?
To the chair, Senator Stedman, yes, to the extent that it's on the spot market versus on long-term contracts, that price could fluctuate. And I want to make sure that we don't lock in on the third. That third was just at a price point that the pipeline was still, in our estimation, a viable project. Obviously, if the gas is at a substantially higher rate, that third goes down very, very quickly.
Follow up.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My only point is I'd like to know what ballpark we're playing in with these numbers. If local communities are looking at $15 billion and somehow thinking it's coming their way, that looks like an awful lot of money. And even if we just look at 1 year, it's $500 million that is spreading out. And at the margins on gas, I know we need to look to the future. I know that that's what risk takers do, and that's how they make billions of dollars. So I appreciate that. I just want to be realistic as we talk to municipalities about the numbers that they might take and how those numbers could topple a project that might be marginal as we move forward.
And we've got 25% of the risk, too.
Yep.
To the chair, Senator McKinnon, that is a good point. And if looking at the transcripts of the meeting, if we don't transcribe, but if you look at the minutes of the meetings, you'll see that most of the mayors at some point in time have said, a large portion of no project is zero, and that they were very sensitive that some of the decisions they made and actually locking in on some of these things way early in this process of a project was done to help accommodate the project being able to move forward. And the next slide will show another couple of areas where the agreement is provides a benefit to the project.
Please continue.
And this slide, which doesn't appear to have a number on it, maybe slide 10, and this is just a schematic. It's not to scale. But there's two areas where the agreement provides some relief on the front end when the project, of course, is most challenged and doesn't have a lot of cash flow. The first is the CPILT at $800 million, which is somewhere between a half and a third of what the project would have collected under just a standard property tax regime. So for those 5 years of construction, it really lessens the burden down to just impacts that the project is causing. It then goes, as it goes into operations, it uses a five-year floating average of throughput. If you assume that this project will be brought online to generate gas as soon as possible, it likely will be brought online maybe with just a single train in the LNG plant, just to start generating cash. And so in that first year, you might only have a third of your total production, in the second year, two-thirds, in the third year, three-thirds. But using that as a five-year floating average, you really don't then get to your full level of the pilt until year seven or eight. And so it provides that five-year floating average provides another economic benefit to the project in the early years. In the out years, it's actually a benefit to municipalities because it gives them some stability in the payments, in that if there were an interruption for a period of time where gas wasn't flowing, and this pilt will be tied to throughput of gas, that would be spread over 5 years as well. So it would just be a smaller change in the total payment. what do we still need to do? We still need to work on the volume and for setting the design rate. I actually took timing out of the slide that I had. So it's primarily the volume of what is the going to be the base volume for this particular project.
On that point, I didn't mean to interrupt, but that was one of my on that point. That is yet to be determined because we're looking at a 48-inch pipeline, right? And so these numbers, albeit they're pretty firm, they could move a little bit if you were to go to a 48-inch pipeline.
Chairman Bishop, that's correct, but because of the way this has been negotiated, we will set the throughput based on a design that is commensurate with the $55 billion estimate. If the pipeline goes to a 48-inch versus a 42, that would allow for greater throughput. That would increase essentially the target payment and the amount of payments that would be paid in the build. So that's kind of the way. Rather than having to go back and recalculate everything, tying everything to the throughput allows those kind of changes in the discussion to just flow through the actual throughput of the pipeline versus having to recalculate all the costs. You know, a decision that was made to make it dynamic, since again we know that we're putting a hard number on paper very early in the process.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Just maybe remind me a little bit on how hard the numbers actually are, because we all expect to have a long-term business arrangement with our three partners that's going to last for decades. Hopefully, much smoother than the TAPS process did as a goal. But this PILT, how inelastic is this agreement if we decide to pass this thing?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, the idea is that this would be a part of the fiscal package for the pipeline, and it would be part of the contract, and those PILTs would be set for the 25 years.
Senator Stedman, follow-up? Well, I guess I look at it as a difference between how we engage and make agreements with our three partners versus how we interact with the state's portion. So what I'm hearing you say that this would basically be tied down for the 25 years, and we would be giving up our appropriating power dealing with this property tax issue on the gas line for that period. I'm not talking about changing the numerics coming back or changing the partnership split. I'm talking about changing our internal 25%, which is my understanding is this is part of it. So why would, if that's the case, why would we do that?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, this is not part of the cash flow from our 25%. This is a separate cash flow with the project. Ultimately, the allocation between the state and the municipalities can be left as open-ended as the legislature feels is necessary to be. The important part for the project is how much the total dollars are. That's what they need to have to calculate the economics of the project in relationship to all of the other components that they're negotiating. So ultimately the language of the statutory language that would implement this would still be in the hands of the legislature as far as the allocation between state and municipalities.
Just again, we're just getting new into this. We've got to get the basics down so we all understand what's going on. My understanding is this was part of our 25%. So you're telling us that if this is in addition to the 25%?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, that is correct.
Okay. Follow-up? Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's not a follow-up, but just to clarify for those that might be watching at home, we're part of a mega project, and we have a 25% ownership in that project. Is that accurate, Commissioner?
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, at this point in time, 25% is our ownership share.
And the governor is bringing forward a fiscal package that has various components that affect project viability and the economics of that project. Is that correct?
To the chair, could you repeat the question?
There are a variety of fiscal certainty positions that we need to enter the project and make it successful for our partners as well as the fiscals for the state of Alaska to actually look at.
So the chair, Senator McKinney, correct. There are certain contracts to give certainty on both sides that need to be negotiated.
And so there's a gas price as far as taxing on a production level that is a different bill. And then this is a second component of the fiscal package that we're looking at that is property taxes and how that value is made certain for both the state of Alaska and for our parties through property tax. And we're talking about doing that as payment in lieu of taxes so we can fix the rate. Is that correct for the partners in the project?
The Chair, Senator McKinney, that is correct.
And then if I'm appropriately understanding what Senator Stedman just spoke about, and your response, you're saying as long as the fixed total of the property tax stays the same, the state can do whatever we want with our share of what we receive from the project, but that will not affect the project economics. It's in the legislature's venue if we wanted to share more or less under our 25% that we retain that statutory authority, or can the municipalities count on the agreement staying fixed and that they can count on whatever is finally agreed on as their fixed payment over 25 years.
So the Chair, Senator McKinnon, that is what needs to still be determined, and the MAG is still working on their position on it, but it's been made very clear to the MAG by the state that the expectation is that the legislature will determine the proper way to allocate that.
Senator Stedman, just going back to yesterday, we had a presentation and resources. Maybe I got a little confused with one of the slides, so maybe we can get together on our 25%. There's a slide within that presentation, and there was some comments made on our royalty share, and then plussing up from that royalty share to get up to the 25 was the property tax component. So I just need to make sure I'm clear on that. Maybe I just misheard or misinterpreted the slide.
Yes.
So we'll get that cleared up.
So, Chair, I will look into that. I'm not sure what they would have been talking about.
I could have possibly misheard it, too. So I'll get it cleared up with your department. Okay, continue, please.
Other areas that need to be determined is whether the flow rate will be measured in MCF or in MMBTUs. That really gets into gas composition and whether we think the gas will become richer or leaner over time and whether we want to take that risk or just go purely with the volume of the gas. Measurement locations, whether it's the GTP, the pipeline, and the LNG, whether it's at the inlet or the outlet, whether we want to measure in all three places or in a single place.
Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Specifically on the flow rate measurement, it's my understanding that we wanted, or at least there was discussion, to have propane offtakes for communities that are in rural Alaska. Is that the difference between the two measurement rates, is so that we can take a higher value product off, and that I'm trying to get clarity on what that is, because I know that there was at least discussion of propane offtake.
So the Chair, Senator McKinnon, that would be part of it, that there would be within the pipeline section that the amount going in may be less than the amount coming out, because there's also fuel gas that will be burned through that's taken off the pipeline as well. So the question is, whatever place we measure it, we have to set the pilt according to that measurement. So, you know, more gas at the front end, we end up with a lower cents per MCF per MMBTU. We have less gas coming out the tail end, again, then we would have a higher pilt so that we'd still end up generating the same revenue.
Senator Stedman, do you have a question? Oh, I just wrote down that gold plating that we dealt with PPT and, you know, credits and deductions, and just thinking of moving a lot of money into small areas of the state could lead to disproportionate results.
just a concern, and our appropriating power is a concern also.
Just a comment on my from my part, and I see the industry's back there paying attention. But flow rate measurement, just whether you're going to measure it in thousands of cubic feet or BTUs, I mean, we probably got a pretty good idea which way we're going to launch because we've been cycling the Prudhoe Bay gas. It's a known commodity. So the kind of the unknowns is the Point Thompson gas and whatever Foothills gas or Middle Earth gas. So I would think that should be something that could not be, you know, something that would come to terms pretty quickly on, or not quickly, but got a good understanding.
Chairman Bishop, they have provided us with multiple scenarios that we could pick from that they say would work for them. Those were submitted to our contractor to take a look at to make sure that we're in alignment with their estimates. So. And then finally, the next steps for the MAG. They need to provide recommendations on the proposed structure and target amounts for the C-pilt and O-pilt. That will be embedded within their report to their governor this year on what they've agreed to, or what they've at least allowed to be a reasonable assumption for the state, because obviously they won't be in the negotiations when we sit down to do the contracts. We're with the producers. They provide for recommendations on the allocation and disbursement, which has been the bulk of our discussion here. The draft of the report is in final review and should be to the governor, we're hoping, Monday. And, of course, the MAG will have their own specific recommendations on legislation. And that's the update on the project of the PILT as it stands today.
Thank you, Commissioner. And you can tell this is just kicking it off, and we're going to have you can just tell by the tenor of the discussion here in the first hour that there'll be more questions as we go along, probably quite a few more. But any questions right now? If we're going to go to public testimony here in a minute. Senator Stedman?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, just before we get into that, just a brief reminder. It'd be nice to see how other jurisdictions do this, even though this train is halfway down the track. I'm just kind of curious what other sovereigns, how many set up impact funds, how many, you know, do PILTs, some kind of combination. So, because this to me looks like it's just an extension of something that was created 30 years ago. Today is, you know, has some age to it, I guess. And I don't know how viable having something live on for another 30 or 50 years is. You know, it's a multi-generation decision, so it'd be nice to have a little bit of background on the parameters versus just one.
Yeah. So the Chair, Senator Stedman, we did have discussions with the producers, particularly as we were looking at construction impact payments. They did provide some information. I'm not sure whether confidential or not, on some of the other agreements that they had. But a PILT during construction is not uncommon to cover impact payments.
It wouldn't be a problem. Could you, any of that is shareable on those other scenarios that the industry brought to the table for the discussion, could you provide them to the committee, and I'll make sure Senator Stedman gets a copy?
Chairman Bishop, absolutely. We'll work with the producers and see what we can bring forward. And I just want to make sure it's very clear that this is the tentative alignment we have with the producers. The MAG has been brought along and informed the process. They're in general alignment with it, but they will, I'm sure, voice their own opinions on some areas where they may disagree.
And I think we're going to hear from some of those here momentarily, so we'll see if they can concur with the general statements. So thank you very much. Okay, we're going to go to public testimony, and it's going to be open. And I believe Jeff Stepp from the mayor's office in Fairbanks.
Thank you, Senator. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir, we can hear you.
Okay.
Floor is yours. You got 3 minutes.
Okay, thank you. For the record, my name is Jeff Stepp, Special Assistant to Mayor Castle of the Fairbanks North Star Borough. Senator Bishop, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to offer remarks. Thank you for the interesting discussion and good questions. As you know, Senator Bishop, Mayor Castle was elected to serve in October of 2015 and became a member of the Municipal Advisory Group in November of 2015. Much of the work that Commissioner Hoffbeck discussed during his presentation had already been completed at that time. Mayor Castle greatly appreciates the opportunity to continue the Fairbanks North Star Borough's participation with fellow mayors and other colleagues from around the state. We also appreciate the leadership and participation of Commissioner Hoffbeck especially, and also Commissioner Myers and Deputy Commissioner Parody. Your engagement early in the session is also appreciated. As Commissioner Hoffbeck noted on his final slide, there is still much work ahead with respect to providing recommendations on the proposed structure and target amounts of both the C-PIL and the O-PIL, providing recommendations on allocation and disbursement of payments, completing the 2015 annual report, as well as providing recommendations ultimately on legislation. Mayor Castle looks forward to working with this committee, the state legislature, the commissioner administration, the MAG board, and all other stakeholders to achieve this work so that the commercialization of North Slope gas becomes a reality and benefits all Alaskans. Thank you.
Jeff, thank you for those comments, and to give Mayor Castle our best here. So thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Okay. I believe we're going to go to the top of the world next. I believe Mayor Brower, are you on the phone?
Good afternoon, Chairman Bishop and members of the Senate.
Good afternoon, Mayor Brower, and welcome. Good to hear your voice. How's everything at the top of the world?
Pristine. Very pristine after a storm. Thank you very much, members of the Senate Community and Regional Affairs, Senator Hoffman, Senator Stedman, Senator McKinnon, Senator Egan, and above all, Chairman Bishop. It's all good to see you. I'm seeing the TV going, but we're going, and thank you very much, Commissioner Hoffbeck, for giving a presentation. For the record, my name is Charlotte Brower. I am the mayor of the North Slope Borough. Thank you for looking at Senate Bill 100 and for taking testimony. I would like to begin my testimony with a short walk down memory lane. 2 years ago, we all worked together to pass Senate Bill 138 to create the framework for the Alaska LNG Natural Gas Pipeline Project. Some of the members of this committee today were on the Senate Finance Committee in 2014 when we all worked together to address some of the concerns being expressed by municipal mayors. One of the primary concerns back then was how the state would address property taxes on the project. There were many questions then, and there are still many questions today. The North Slope Borough operates under the property tax system of Alaska Statutes 4356 and 2945. Taxable oil and gas properties represents 97% of borough's full value determination. We do not have significant access to other tax-based options such as retail sales, raw fish, alcohol, tobacco, or car rentals. Throughout our history, the North Slope Borough has developed a good working relationship with the oil companies. We have a great deal of experience with these companies on both property taxes and payments in lieu of taxes. There are 3 points I would like to put forward today. First, the North Slope Borough has worked with the oil industry and the state of Alaska on North Slope development for over 40 years. The borough is now looking at further development with the Alaska LNG project. Not only do we want to see the benefits of this project, but we want to see this project benefit our fellow Alaskans and our industry partners. Second, the legislation before you today, Senate Bill 100, is about coming up with a replacement system for local property taxes. Whatever system is used to replace property taxes should therefore be allocated with respect to the location and value of the respective assets. Third, once a replacement system and allocation plan has been agreed upon by the municipalities, the state, and the oil companies, the Northville Borough would like to see annual payments made directly from the taxpayers to the impacted municipalities. This last point is very important, and it is one that we ask you to give full consideration. Our own experience with working with industry has taught us that a direct payment system will provide better fiscal certainty to the project. Putting up for an opportunity to testify today, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Mayor Brower. And if we don't have your comments, well, I'm sure we can get them sent in to the committee. We'd like to have a hard copy, please. Thank you. Okay, next.
We'll do that. Thank you.
You bet. Thanks. Next online, we have the Denali Borough Mayor, Clay Walker.
Thank you, Chairman Bishop. And through the chair, thank you, Senators, for holding this hearing. As the Denali Borough Mayor, I have served on the MAG board for the past 2 years. I'd like to go on record in support of the MAG board's work and its recommendations to date. I appreciate Chairman Hoffbeck's leadership on the board, and feel that as a board we've been productive in constructing and forwarding workable recommendations regarding proposed changes to property tax statute, as is our charge. Early in your discussions, the concept of a PILT was discussed, and I'd like to remind the committee that language, PILT language, is included in SB 138. SB 100, which currently contains no PILT language and, of course, and clearly needs, you know, numerous revisions, can be a starting point. And I appreciate that you are beginning this dialogue this early in the session. And I'd like to state and assure you that the MAG board's work has been, well, we've always kind of used as a yardstick all along the way what is fair and reasonable for municipalities, the state, and project partners to help provide this project, you know, the durable, stable tax structure it needs to succeed. So thank you for your work on this, and look forward to continuing together on it.
Thank you, Mayor Walker. We're going to take a brief of these. On the record. Okay, I think if I'm correct, Anchorage LIO has Mr. Charles McKee online. Charles McKee, Anchorage LIO, are you there? Cody, we got a line to Anchorage. We're open. Okay, one more time. Charles McKee, Anchorage LIO.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Yes, I was looking at the booklet here, Mr. Chairman.
Could you put your name on the record and where you're from, please?
Oh, my name's Charles McKee, and Anchorage, Alaska. I see that a retired miner, Fairbanks, as your previous occupation.
I'm a retired operating engineer, but...
Also, yes, right, and miner. So I guess you're familiar with the transparency between state jurisdiction, native jurisdiction, federal jurisdiction as far as mining properties go. You're familiar with that, correct?
Well, I might not be an expert.
Well, you have to deal with them if they're on a particular piece of ground, right?
Is your testimony...
It's a relationship to this... It's a relationship to this the pipeline and how it transverses various properties, be it native, state, or federal. I'm trying to get across to you the transparency. You have to take into consideration all these different jurisdictions and formalities and laws and processes and policies. That's what I'm trying to get at, and I'm trying to point out the fact that you're talking taxes, taxation. Are we selling our resource for a debt instrument, worth a debt instrument? Are we a purchasing agent for a Federal Reserve Corporation? Why do we have a public law that states deposit for credit on account or exchange for non-redeemable Federal Reserve notes? 12 U.S.C. Squiggly's 411. So that transfers it to a currency. Okay, it goes from a debt instrument that's got a lien on it automatically, and then that lien goes to the IRS, and they come and collect. If you're a purchasing agent for the federal, if you're using your debt instrument, and that's all you're using, and you're not codifying it, you're not clarifying the transfer of the currency used or debt instrument, then you're working as a purchasing agent for the Federal Reserve Corporation and its lien agency. All I'm trying to do is clarify how we're going to build this thing through credit for value off of our trust account. It's called Susticky Trust. How we undo the lien or bond against the individual so we can become true participants in the construction with currency. There's no money out there. It's currency, credit for value on our signature. That's why it's important when you go and sign something, they check your credit reference. If your credit is good, then your signature. It's all based on signature. Your currency is gone.
Charles, you want to wrap up because your 3 minutes is up.
Okay, what I'm trying to point out is if you want this to be paid for and there's a lien against it, let's do it the proper way.
Thank you. And public testimony is now closed. Okay, with that being said, public testimony is closed. Anything else from the committee members today? Seeing none, as I stated earlier, we will not be taking any action on this bill today. It's going to be set aside. And are there any further comments, Commissioner? Good. All right, seeing none, I'll adjourn today's meeting here in just a second. But I just like to say, we're getting back in the groove here on this bill, and as we work this process to the people of Alaska, this is a good committee that's deep with talent, and I just really feel honored to be the chair of this committee working with this group. So with that being said, I'm going to adjourn today's meeting of the Senate Community and Regional Affairs at 4:50 p.m.
He's just trying to keep us...